I guess the other thing that somebody pointed out to me that I thought was interesting is that the docetaxel or the AC docetaxel part of that study included patients who got the AC pre-op and then the docetaxel post-op. And the question of, is that really the same, you know, in terms of dose density, what's going on during surgery in terms of maybe there are growth factors that are stimulating the tumor that maybe it's a different situation. Any thoughts on that?
It's interesting, you know, as you well know, there's been a large number now of randomized trials comparing preoperative chemotherapy to the same chemotherapy given postoperatively, and we've not been able to demonstrate any outcome difference there. So though that may be possible, Neil, that to me would not seem like the most likely scenario, though they're possibly...
Well, the idea here was that they were separated.
Right,
you
right.
Know, one, you know, I don't know, a couple months later, and the things are happening in between. Is
possible.
So it's not a pure pre versus
right.
post-op
yes.
issue.
Yes, I hear you. Possible. But usually the delay for surgery is not inordinate, usually. It's, you know, usually on the order of 3 to 4 weeks.
Well, also, again, I just heard about this, you know, Mike Baum has been talking about, I guess he published a paper, I didn't see it, looking at the hazard rate for recurrence, where he showed that there's a peak at 2 years and a peak at 5 years. And his thought is the peak of 2 years is related to surgery, that there's a stimulation of tumor growth, you know, the old Bernie Fisher
mm-hmm,
thing,
mm-hmm.
and that you see the recurrences at 2 years. And actually, he says that what happens is you lose that peak with Arimidex in the adjuvant setting, and that's the way it works. Have you heard that, incidentally?
No. I have long wondered why there is such a large peak at 2 years and have long thought about the Bernie Fisher.
Right.
Because there's data in melanoma as well that suggest a very similar scenario. So I've long wondered about that. But the part about Arimidex suppressing that recurrence at 2 years is very interesting.
Well, he says if you look at the attack hazard, remember when
yes.
when Tony Howe presented the hazard rates, that's actually what you're seeing. I didn't
mm-hmm.
really notice it.
Yes. Again, I mean, I think there, an interesting question, again, and more we're going to have to go back to the biologic subsets of breast cancer, looking at the luminal A and the luminal B, because the luminal B are the more highly proliferative. They're partially growth factor-driven breast cancer. They tend to be PR negative or lightly PR positive, the higher recurrence score breast cancers. And if you look at the natural history of those from the original Soralee paper, they recur very quickly. And these are largely untreated patients. They recur very quickly. So certainly, in that particular group of patients, I think there's probably a pretty strong imperative to want to be using an aromatase inhibitor for those patients. Conversely, very interesting data from Gabe Hortabagi presented at ASCO 2004, where looking at the recurrences of breast cancers between years 5 and 10 and showing for the ERPR positive group, the ERPR negative group was looking very good because their recurrences happen, generally speaking, before 5 years. But the ER and PR positive group, the luminal A's, with the much more indolent biology, Neil, I think those are the low-grade lymphomas of breast cancer. It's a great concern. It may be at the end of the day, once we understand what are the best chemotherapy agents to treat the luminal B's with, the HER2's with, and the basal-likes with, these are the rapidly proliferating. They may be more apoptotic. And ironically, though they can kill a woman faster if treated inappropriately or ineffectively, if treated correctly, once we figure out exactly how to do that, they may be more highly curative, whereas the low apoptotic potential of these ERPR strongly positive, low proliferative breast cancers that have the late recurrences may be looking at lifelong therapy. And so there, I am not so sure that we need to be starting with an aromatase inhibitor only for the simple reasons we don't know what to do after 5 years.
And it's interesting, you know, that the MA17 trial now is looking at another randomization. So now we're starting to look at treatment strategies that span 10 years or more.
Yes, and it may or may not be that patients with luminal B biology who are treated with the chemotherapy, a la the B20 that has the very, sounds like, high benefit from chemotherapy, and that was just CMF, you know, once we, you know.
That's true.
I mean,
you're right, it was
so,
CMF.
You know, we may really be able to benefit those patients remarkably from chemotherapy. I think that's going to be a highly chemotherapy-sensitive group of patients. The luminal Bs may not need 10 or 15 years of hormonal therapy. But we just need to sort this out. We need to, and the good thing is that the investigators are beginning to help us be able to interrogate this by paraffin so that we can actually begin to do some hypothesis generating analysis of these large trials like MA17. I mean, the NSABP has really taken the lead in doing that with their, you know, huge database and tissue collections.
Yeah, Soon was telling me that they had to go back and complete, it took them like a couple of years, completely de-identify 60,000 case records in order to do all this stuff. By hand, like shredding things and taking the names off, all for, you know, privacy issues.
Wow.
And once they had that done, now, you know, they're ready to rock and roll. But it was a huge thing to get the tissue together.
Wow, that is amazing. Wow.
You know, it's